Investing Simplified is brought to you by Chuck Price, President and Wealth Manager of Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm and author of Investing Simplified, the book. Individual situations will vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual professional advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated. Investing Simplified is the longest-running live financial show in America, with a financial advisor, an estate planning attorney, and a CPA to answer your questions for free, and is broadcast live from Portland, Oregon on affiliated stations throughout the Pacific Northwest. Chuck can be contacted by visiting www.pfgwm.com. You can email Chuck with a question at askchuck@pfgwm.com. Or you can call him right now at 503-417-9595. That's 503-417-9595. Or for our long distance and podcast listeners, you can call toll free at 877-733-1011. That's 877-733-1011. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Chuck Price.
Well, welcome to Investing Simplified. This is the show that the one financial show in the Portland area that you can pick up the phone, actually give us a call and ask a question. In studio with me is Kevin Steggy with the Baker Colson CPA firm.
Good morning, Chuck.
Good morning, Kevin. And Carl Jepson with the Carl Jepson Attorney at Law.
Yeah. Well, yeah, both of us.
It's just kind of hard to roll.
I know. It's kind of hard to get used to, isn't it? Well, you know, there was 25 years of you know, leaving the mothership was, you know, it's interesting. It's really been great. It really has been really nice. It's more relaxing for me, and it gives me more time with my clients. You know, I can spend as much time as I want to without worrying about, you know, taking up the conference room.
And, well, you know, I certainly agree with that. 10 years ago when we went totally independent, I certainly agree with you 100%.
Yeah, it's a really nice thing, and you know, we're getting back up to speed to where we're kind of running a little more efficiently, and I'm having still enjoying my practice, and I figure as long as I can enjoy my practice and do my work, it's going to be a good thing.
Well, you know, I'm going to do something different here. If you're a listener to this show and you listen to it, give us a call, pick up the phone, and give us a call. But Kevin, I'm going to right off the top of the show. If somebody wants to get a hold of you, how do they do it?
We are at baker-colson.com. That's our website. Our phone number is 503-666-5569, and we are located out the east side of the east side of Gresham.
Okay, and Carl?
Well, I actually have a website. It's carljepsonlaw.com. There you are. That's it. And then my telephone number is 971-229-0585. And so there you go.
I'm really easy. Carl's conveniently located at in the Mall 205.
That's right. I am.
At 555 Southeast 99th Avenue. He's
yes,
in Suite 101.
Yeah.
And we're in Suite 103.
Yeah.
So,
there you go.
Yeah. And you can check me out on my website. By the way, I did want to give those people who look at our website a heads up. We've had a little bit of problem on our Social Security program. It's being updated. And so people who have went in there and asked for questions and stuff, we haven't been able to get back to you because it's been a mess up. But it's getting done, I hope. So I'm not very technical, so it is getting done. And you'll be able to actually access online a lot of information about Social Security. And if you want to do a Social Security review, you can call my office and schedule one, or you can sign up right on the website. And the website is pfgwm.com. That's pfgwm.com. And Kevin, you had a question?
I was going to say, is this a changeover on the Social Security? Is this anything related to the mess up at SSA and the bad advice that they had been
Absolutely.
Giving?
One of the things we talk about it is the fact that number one, they're not allowed to tell you the best benefit, which is kind of contrary to what we had heard before. And they're not allowed to tell you. And they have made so many mistakes in telling people that they could do or what they couldn't do, and in many cases they've been wrong.
And especially with the change that came, what was
the
it?
The file and suspend.
Yeah, the first part of this year, some new, yeah.
The file and suspend.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's been very, very confusing what's been out there, but just for you listeners, it has changed, and the rules have changed. But still, If you still properly do your Social Security, you can still save hundreds of thousands of dollars by doing it correctly. So there's still things you can do, you know, get around that. But the file and suspend was a great thing that is gone, and it's gone. That's all there is to it.
Yeah, it was last year sometime that it wasn't in sometime August or so.
Yeah, for all you voters out there, you might remember this when it comes to voting, because that was one of Obama's big push-throughs that he did, and unfortunately, the stupid House and Senate let him get away with it.
Part of the Obamacare bill, I believe, to help fund some of that, maybe?
Yep.
Or is this
I'm not sure about that, I know it, a lot of it has been done for that.
Yeah.
And the fact is, people who pay into Social Security, first of all, you have to pay in for 40 quarters, which is 10 years. So this isn't supposed to be a giveaway program, although in the past, they have given it away. In fact, in my book, if you haven't read my book, you really should, called Investing Simplified. In my book, I talk about Malcolm Burko, who's a self-made millionaire, who wrote a letter to the Social Security Department under the Freedom of Information Act, requesting a full accounting of all the money they've taken in and all the money they've spent. And believe it or not, they wrote back to him, they don't know. Now, here's my question. If they don't know, why isn't somebody in jail? Somebody stole our money. And Malcolm Burko's team of attorneys and accountants, because he is a billionaire, he went and took all the CPAs and accountants. He estimates that the Social Security Foundation has had over $20 trillion unaccountable for. Now, if you think about it, we've been paying into Social Security since the late 30s. So just think about 300 million people, you know, maybe 150 of them working, maybe. I think less than that now. But anyway, if 150 million people are working and contributing to Social Security, just think how much money's going in. Because remember, Carl, now that you are one of us self-employed people, mm-hmm. you fully understand the employer pays both parts of Social Security. Of course, you did as a partner as well.
Yes.
You had to pay that. But, and Kevin, you and I talk about that a lot. The employer has to match part of your Social Security. So when you put the money in Social Security, there's really twice as much going in, up to, what, $118,000 this year. And so, look, this is not – one of the things that makes me maddest of all, and I talk about it in my book, one thing that makes me maddest of all is that we allow both parties – all politicians, we allow them to call this, what do they call it?
An entitlement.
Yeah. Yes. It's not an entitlement if you force me to spend my frickin' money and put my money away for 40 years, and then you're going to grant me, maybe if you want to pay me the money. And our stupid Supreme Court, by the way, did have a case that they called Social Security is a tax. Gee, does that sound like Obamacare? They call it a tax, and therefore we have no right to our own money. The federal government has a right to that money. They call it a tax program. So therefore, you know, if we ever needed a change in the Supreme Court, we need to take those guys and flush them down the toilet and start all over again. We really do. It is absolutely insane that we give these people lifetime jobs. Who should have a lifetime job? Nobody. The thing is, in this country, what we're doing is we shoot ourselves in the foot. We go one step forward, two steps back. It's just insane what we do. And I hope that as this thing goes out in the political thing, and of course, no secret, I'm for Donald Trump. So I just will say it right there. I'm voting for Trump because I don't want somebody that puts my family, my country, in jeopardy for her stupidity. And anybody that is stupid enough to have their own server running multiple phones offline with the federal government discussing secrets, which is a fact, under oath, she had to testify, under oath, she did. We don't know, and they don't know who saw those. They don't know who tacked her emails. She also just accidentally, on purpose, deleted 33,000 of them. Really? I got to tell you, if you're an American at all and you look at that, if we don't have laws and penalties for the elite people in this country that are not the same as for you and me, folks, do you really want to live in a country where the politicians can do any damn thing they want and flip us the bird and say, we are above the law, you can't touch us? Do we really want to live in that kind of country? I don't. I mean, I didn't serve in the military to allow that kind of stuff for us to have a dictatorship in America. And I think most Americans don't want to have a dictatorship. You know, we may not like the other party, and we may not like a lot of things about it. But the one thing we always grew up with was fairness, and that everybody under the law was treated equally no matter what, no matter race, no matter their religion, no matter what. But when you have politicians above the law, we got a problem in this country, folks, and it's not going to go away maybe just by one election. But I'll tell you what, it'd go a pretty good step in the right direction to make a big change at the top, because this country's headed in a place. And I'm telling you, when you listen, you know, the fact that Turkey, we always support the wrong side. Turkey now is becoming more Islamic irrational, I should say, by this leader that they have. This guy is not democratic. Yeah, he won an election. Like, he won an election, like, when you go in and vote, if you don't vote for me, you might get shot. I mean, come on. This is ridiculous. If you believe that, you believe in the tooth fairy. The fact is, this guy is, it's just like the guys in Syria that are part of the Brotherhood. My God, what are we doing? We're shooting ourselves in the foot. And folks, I feel very bad for the people in Germany yesterday. 9 people killed, maybe 10. Last I heard was 9. You know, here we go again. Another mass killing. Another terrorist attack. The shooter was Iranian, living in Germany. The fact is, folks, this is now becoming every day. And I don't know about you, but I'm sick of it. And I don't want it to be that way on American soil. I don't think any of us want our children, our grandchildren, or our great-grandchildren to live under that kind of a cloud every single day. Not going to happen. Speaking about the markets, if you look at the markets, what's happening in the market, we had a big run-up. One of the reasons why we're having a big run-up is the whole dang world is doing, again, printing money, pushing money back into governments. Japan is, Europe is, you know, and Germany, I got to tell you, we discussed this. If you didn't listen to our show last week with Harry Dent, you need to listen to it. It was one of the better shows we've had with Harry. And I'm telling you, the whole world is a bubble, and it's blowing up, and it's getting bigger and bigger. And the more we manipulate the markets like we're doing in this country, Kevin, when the 10-year Treasury rate drops down to 1.37, you got to be kidding me. And it's sitting there at about 1.59 now. That is historically really, really low. Folks, as Harry Dent said, and I want to emphasize this to you, if you don't have a strategy for deflation, if your advisors always talked about inflation, I got news for you. We're not in an inflation period. We're in a deflation period. People are making less money than they have for the last 15 years. They're making less money. Home prices are going to crash. So if you're going to sell a house, I would sell it, because eventually it's going to blow. And when it blows, real estate's going to be one of the things that's going to drop just as fast as the stock market. If you go back and look at 2006 and 2007, and talk to any real estate person that'll be honest with you, they will tell you the same ridiculous thing is happening. You put your house up for sale, you got 6 or 8 bidders. People, That is insane. And listen, every time you see a run-up like that, it's kind of like the run-up in the 90s when we were warning that, you know, hey, this is not going to keep going, folks. You can't have 30, 40% returns and have the market grow by that. It just can't do it. Common sense tells you you've seen this movie before.
You know, Chuck, that's speaking about a movie. There's a movie that you should, if you haven't seen it, you should see The Big Short. And it's about the 2008 real estate crash. And about how the Wall Street great gurus knew about it and profited by it. That's how they created those credit default swap things. And I still don't understand how those.
But it did go back to 1996 when the Clinton administration and Newt Gingrich conspired to put that together in the Banking Reform Act that put that all together.
No, they didn't go that far, but they went back. This guy said, you know, he was shorting the market on these mortgage securities, and all of the traditional brokerage and bankers and stuff said, you're nuts. You can't. That doesn't work. And they basically said, sure, we'll give you the money. You're an idiot. You know. Then, of course, he ended up being a bazillionaire. But, I mean, they knew exactly what they were doing. I mean, they knew that these were bad loans. So it was, I mean, if you believe this movie. So,
well, yeah.
It's worth looking at.
The problem with it, I haven't seen the movie, so I can't say. But one of the things I've long argued about is the crash that came about, part of it came about because the companies were lending to people that shouldn't be buying homes. But that was a federal law. You had to. In fact, many national banks were threatened with their FDIC coverage if they wouldn't make these loans to people that shouldn't be borrowing. Yeah. And that was mandated by the federal frickin' government. So, you know, our government, I don't disagree that the banks got greedy and the banks were in there, but Goldman Sachs, who was one of the biggest ones, is Hillary's biggest contributor. And when you look at who's paying who, look, if you don't believe these big politicians are in bed with big banks, then you got a problem. You got to just listen to what's going on. And the problem in America, half the people don't listen. They don't read. They don't investigate. And I'm telling you, you got to look into the rest of the story. I'm done now. So we're going to break and we'll come right back with Carl's comments. And if you got a question, you want to comment about investing, you want to talk about the market, or you just want to chat, that's fine. 503-417-9595, toll free 877-733-1011. We'll be right back with Investing Simplified.
People are crazy.
Hi, I'm Carl Jepson, estate planning attorney and co-host of the radio program Investing Simplified. I recently left the Warren Allen Law Firm to open my own office. Professional and personable service have always been the hallmarks of my practice. I believe that this move will allow me to spend more time with my clients. For more than 37 years, it has been my privilege to assist clients with practical estate planning with wills, trusts, powers of attorney, advance directives, and other documents so that they may have peace of mind knowing that their affairs are in order. When probate becomes necessary, emotions of family members may become fragile. Having an experienced attorney that can empathize with what the client is going through makes the process much easier. My new office is conveniently located at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 101, just across from Mall 205, and my phone number is 971-229-0585. That's 971-229-0585.
Got a legal question? Coming up is Carl Jepson, estate planning attorney, with Carl's comments. You can call Carl now at 503-417-9595 or toll free at 877-733-1011. Now, here's Carl Jepson.
All right, send lawyers, guns, and money.
Well, welcome back to Investing Simplified. This is Carl Jepson, and I'm going to get to Carl's comments, but I understand that we have a caller on the line.
You got Rob. You got a question about a Roth conversion?
Yes, I do. First off, I wonder if you have room on your soapbox for one more person.
Sure, absolutely, always.
But, yeah, I was just wondering if you need earned income for a Roth conversion, or you can take it out of your IRA and convert it.
Well, to do a conversion, you don't need earned income. You can do it at any time, and you can even do it when you're 70 and a half, but you got to do your RMD first before you do
right.
anything. But no, you only need income to contribute to it.
Oh, I see. And so is there a limit that you can convert? Is it the 5,500 or?
No, unlimited. As long as you're willing to pay all the state and federal taxes, you can do whatever you want to do on it.
Right. Well, I'm on the borderline. You know, I could put $10,000 a year in and still stay in the 15% bracket. And so I was just curious about that.
Well, then that's not a bad idea. And can I ask you a personal question? How old are you?
Certainly. I'm 68.
Okay. And you're retired?
Yes.
Okay. And if that's not going to affect you and you have and you could do $10,000 a year, you know, have you got good longevity on your side?
Not really.
How about your wife?
Yes, she does.
Okay. Well, as long as one of you do, it's fine because you can pass it to her. So I tell people if you have 10, 15 years to pass it on, what do you think, Kevin?
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, I think it's a good, smart idea. I recommend that all the time if it works in your taxes. The problem is a lot of people, when they get out their retirement and they want to convert their Roth, they're already in a 28% bracket. And if they're in Oregon, oh, my God, they're in 39, you know? So
right.
It takes a long time to catch up. Yeah. But if you're in Washington and you're in a 15, yeah, I don't think that's a bad idea at all.
No, I'm here in Oregon, so you know, I have an extra little bite, but I'm just thinking down the road a ways.
Well, you'd be in a 22 to 23 maybe. So
right.
I would do it. You know, if your wife's got good longevity and you got kids to pass it to?
Right.
Yeah, then what the hey? You know, if it's going to be in your family and it's money that you probably are not going to use anyway, mm-hmm. I would convert it.
And especially if you don't have much in a Roth, I think you really kind of want, you know, you don't want everything in one type of account like a 401k, because if you need the money or something, it's good to have a few different pots. And so definitely getting an allocation over into the Roth is probably a good idea.
Okay, well, that sounds great. And it's an easy way to set up a Roth. We have two, but we're thinking of a different one now.
Well, that's fine. I mean, I think like just a Roth is a Roth. I mean, you can have multiple Roths. That's fine. But I think your strategy, I think you're right on.
Okay, well, thank you very much. And again, I love you guys' show.
Hey, great. Thanks. Thanks for the comment, Rob. Appreciate it. You bet. You know, Carl, I hate to interrupt you here again, but we got another caller on the phone. Pat's got a comment about the 2008-2010 bank bailout. Pat.
Hi. Yes.
Yeah.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So I was going to add one comment to your comment about the banks being required by the federal government to make those bad loans. And then when the bubble burst and the banks were stuck with all those loans, the feds came in and they said, tell you what we're going to do. They went to the big banks, Bank of America, et cetera, and they said, buy out all these bad loans, and we will pay you 75 cents on the dollar for everyone you foreclose and 65 cents on the dollar for everyone you work through. And that's what caused all the foreclosures to start happening. The banks had absolutely no incentive to actually work through those mortgages and try to save some of the people that actually could make it work. Just started foreclosing.
Yeah, and you want to know want to add a little to that, Pat. Right now, the best estimate that I've seen from economic people, and I'm really looking forward to going to Harry Dent's Economic Summit because they have top real estate people there. But when I was in September up at Vancouver, a guy who's supposed to be one of the top, and I can't think of his name right now, but top real estate people said there's over 16 million homes in America that should be foreclosed on, and the banks aren't foreclosing on them because they got no help from the government. And they're going to wait right. when this thing gets bad so they go back so the government can give them more money.
Well,
so we've got another one coming.
Well, the government got angry with robo-foreclosures and started threatening the banks, even though they gave them this deal to begin with.
Yep.
And so the pendulum just keeps swinging. I have a good friend who's also in the investing business, and we were talking the other day, and I said, how safe do you feel at the level of the market? He said, are you kidding? We can sustain 16, but 18 is ridiculous.
Yep. I don't disagree. I hear you. And Pat, we're talking the same language. I agree with you.
So anyway, when I heard your comments, I thought, boy, you know, the story does get deeper every moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's way worse than probably we even know.
I believe that's true.
Yeah, yeah. That's a great call. Thank you very much. Appreciate your input.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
You bet. Now we're going to get to Carl's comments. And that was a great call from Pat, by the way.
Yes, indeed. Well, I want to talk about this is a good segue because I want to talk about easy money.
Easy money?
Easy money, yeah. That's what I want to talk about.
Is that like free money?
What? Not exactly. Oh,
okay.
Not exactly.
Okay.
Here's the thing. It's very common from the standpoint, you know, I do a lot of probate work and trust work and stuff like that. And one of the most common things that happens when somebody dies is the person who's the personal representative calls in and says, well, hurry up. You got to hurry up because I got to pay all these bills for the decedent. And what they're talking about usually is they're talking about utilities and that kind of stuff. And, you know, maybe insurance on the house. And yes, all of those things are really important. And a lot of times they find themselves in a position of not being able to access the decedent's money. And so I'm here to say, well, okay, first of all, before we do that, the number one thing or number the most urgent things that you have to do doesn't necessarily include paying the decedent's bills on time. And I got a couple of reasons why. Number one, first of all, the decedent no longer cares about his credit rating. You know, they don't care. So if they get a late thing, it's tough. You know, he's, you know, what are you going to do? He's, you know, one place or another, and either one of them is out of limits. It's out of the jurisdiction. So number two, he no longer cares about being sued because same thing. You know, how are you going to serve him with process in either of those places? You're not. It's not going to happen. So that's two good reasons. The other thing is that in reality, nobody turns off the heat after the first 10 days. You miss one payment on the house, on the utilities. They don't do that. They can't do that. They send you a letter. They say, hey, you know, pay your bill. And then if you don't do it the next month, they send you another letter. So there's no real big urgency for those kinds of bills. Yeah, it's annoying. No one wants to not pay the bills. But if you tell them that the decedent is in fact a decedent, they're going to say, oh, okay, well, wait a while. And that's kind of what usually happens. But I understand that sometimes people get really, really upset about that. And, you know, even if the worst happened and they wanted to start collection efforts, they had perhaps they were already behind and they've got a letter. They go through the decedent's mail and it says, oh, gosh, you know, here's a 30-day letter that says we're going to sue you if you don't pay up in 30 days. Well, even if they were to file a lawsuit in that thing, by the time that you start the lawsuit and get to the point where you can actually do any kind of collection thing, you're going to spend a minimum of 40 to 60 days before you even get to that close. And that's as early as it ever gets. So relax. Take it easy. Take it easy on the bills. That's not necessarily the most urgent thing. Here's the thing that's most important, I think, is if you don't have access to cash, your heirs don't have access to cash immediately upon your death, and they don't have any money, which often is the case. In fact, a lot of times the heirs are saying, oh, please, you know, we got to get the money. Mom, please hurry up. And so anyway, they want the cash, but they can't get to it a lot of times depending on the account. So, for example, if you have like a bank account that's in a living trust, they can't get to it immediately unless they're already a co-trustee. And the first thing the bank is going to want to see is a death certificate. Well, you're not going to get that for 10 or 15 days. You know, that's just not going to happen. And usually the people who order this bank or the death certificates is the funeral home. So, and the funeral home is going to want their money up front. And depending on what kind of funeral you're going to do and what kind of burial arrangements you're going to do, those things can be really, really spendy depending on, you know, and if you don't have any money, you're toast. And they don't want to do the thing unless they got the money. So that becomes an issue. So ordinarily, I say that I don't like people to put money in joint accounts with their kids because it makes them vulnerable to their children's creditors and potential elder abuse and all that stuff. But if you really, really, really want to make sure that all that those bills get paid and you don't want to go through a prepaid funeral stuff, then have one account that has enough money to get you buried and make that one a joint account. And if during your lifetime anybody screws with it, then you know, just, you know, disinherit the whole lot of them. But for now, you know, at least keep that there and say, this is just for you guys to use to bury me and get it through that way.